Stillman & Company is delivered by TriStar Moving, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Caroline Fenton is here, and I should say looks fully relaxed. You must have had a good weekend. I mean, you are laying back here in the Green Hill studio. I mean, you feel like you are just feeling yourself today.
Feet up, laid back, just making myself at home here in the Green Hill studio.
I mean, clearly so. But we are so lucky, so glad to have her. I met Caroline's parents this weekend. I just want to throw that out there. Great people.
We had hometown dates this weekend.
It was. Yes, it was like the recruiting pitch was kind of over, so it was like family weekend, I guess.
It was nice. But thanks for coming. We were glad to have you.
Oh, no, we had a good time. So, anywho. So, we ended up hanging out Saturday. Then we had to watch Preds game. And that's where I want to start. We have a loaded show today, by the way. Matt Miller, ESPN, NFL draft analyst, going to join us on the program today. We're loaded. Huge Preds game. Got to win today. So it's so funny how just a little information totally can change your outlook one way or another about certain things. People don't talk about this much, but there were four senators. Four. Both Republican, both Democrat, or I shouldn't say both Republican, both Democrat, Democrats and Republicans. And when they found out, when they had intelligence information in February of last year about what was going on in China, they sold all their stocks. They knew that once people caught wind of what was going on, stocks were going to be sold. So they sold their stocks ahead of time because they knew. That got investigated. It was a big deal. I don't know what happened. The housing market in Nashville is crazy. You can't buy a house right now for a reasonable cost. A house that was $500,000 a year ago is probably worth $650,000 now. I have a friend who's a realtor, and she was posting about a house that sold in a part of town that when we were in high school, we used to joke about. Literally used to joke about living in that part of town. She has a house that she's selling with no backyard, and the ask is almost $900,000. Welcome to Nashville, Tennessee. This time last year, you could have bought that house a lot cheaper. But now what's happened is people are looking around, and they see that in certain states like New York or Illinois, think of Chicago area, or California, they get taxed too much. The weather's not great. The houses they own are tiny with no land in here. You can sell your tiny $2 million house in California where you get taxed out the wazoo and you can move here. If you had known these things about what was going to happen with the housing market in Nashville a year ago, how would you have acted? Would you have bought another house knowing that things were going to go up? Would you have sold your current house? Would you have not sold the house you sold last year, waited till this year and sold that house? I don't know. So I look at the Predators and I see a team who last week felt pretty good about their chances of making the playoffs. The odds were, in theory, in their favor. After they beat Tampa Bay's backup goalie on Tuesday, they were at 62% to make the playoffs. That feels pretty good. Then they lost a game Thursday to Carolina, and according to Money Puck, it dropped to about 55%. Still not bad. Then they got beat handedly by Carolina again on Saturday. I know the score was 3-1. I know it was tied 1-1 at one point. I know Ryan Johansson accidentally kicked in a goal. But let's be honest about what we saw on Saturday. And when you couple it with Thursday, the truth is the Nashville Predators simply aren't on the level of the Carolina Hurricanes. They're not. Carolina is up here. Nashville is down here. That's not to say that the Predators are awful. That's not to say that the Predators are terrible or that they need to fire the coach or they need to. But the Predators are not on the same level as Carolina, a team you are most likely to see in the first round of the playoffs. But what about those playoff odds? Right now, according to Money Puck, same people we were quoting last week, the Predators have a 28.2% chance to make the playoffs. 28.2. Down from 62 on Wednesday of last week. That's a big drop. By the way, the Dallas Stars, guess who they play over the next four games? Terrible Detroit, terrible Detroit, terrible Detroit, and yes, terrible Detroit once again. You have three with the Chicago Blackhawks. Three must-win games, most likely. starting tonight. But I ask this question. If you got a redo after what happened last week, knowing what you know now, would that have changed your mindset? There were an awful lot of people who called this show on Wednesday and said, what do you think now, Jared? What do you think now about this team? What do you think you guys wanted to sell? You guys were mad at David Poyle that they didn't sell at the trade deadline. What now? Well, I'll ask you, what now? Now that you didn't sell at the trade deadline, you felt very good about yourself after beating Tampa Bay's backup goalie. You felt very good on Tuesday night. But then you played some big boys, and they played some big boy hockey. So how do we feel? I talked about this all week, 2 weeks ago. And I said, it's unfortunate that the lead up to the trade deadline includes a bunch of games against Chicago, Dallas, and Detroit. Because you can't really get a good feel for your team. You can't get a good feel for what you are or what you're not when you're playing the Detroit Red Wings. You need those games because you need to win them because you need that for the standings. But you can't get a good feel about whether or not your team can compete. After I watched the Predators take on Carolina, I feel pretty comfortable in saying it'd be a really tough road to hoe. It would be very hard to beat that team in a playoff series. And I'm not knocking the Predators by saying this. That's how much I thought after two nights. That's how much I think of the Carolina Hurricanes. They are fast. They are big. They are strong. And they have a goalie that you can't beat. They are well coached. That is going to be a really difficult playoff series if that's how it plays out. I rightfully will throw my hands up and say, I kept thinking Tampa, Tampa, Tampa when discussing the playoffs, when discussing the idea of going for it, when the idea of not selling assets, and I still don't think you'll beat Tampa in a four-game series. But after the two games with Carolina, I'm thinking Carolina, Carolina, Carolina before I think about Tampa Bay. So I have to ask you the question, 615-737-1025. After those two games against Carolina, four games, forget the Dallas win on Sunday of last week, which was a fun game, but forget that win. You lost 3-0 to Tampa Bay. You beat Tampa Bay 7-2. And you got beat, just beat. I mean, you played well. That's the toughest. That's the hard part for me, is that I feel like the Predators played an admirable game both Thursday and on Saturday. Like, I thought they played hard. I thought they played smart. I thought they played the same way they've been playing against all these other teams, and beating them is how they played against Carolina. And I never felt like they really had a chance in either of the two games. I felt like they were chasing it the whole time. So this is a hat tip to how good the Carolina Hurricanes might be. But again, you played Detroit before the deadline. You played Dallas before the deadline. You played Chicago before the deadline. You played Tampa Bay one game, you lost 3-0. That obviously didn't alter the thinking. So I have to ask the question. Now that you know what you are against Tampa Bay, and you know what you are against Carolina, which again I think is 0-5 on the season against Carolina, do you wish you had a do-over for last Monday? Do you wish now you could get some picks for Mikhail Granlin, who didn't make much of a difference this week against Carolina? I'm going to guess David Poyle was not surprised by what he saw this weekend. But at the same time, for everybody who wants to hang their hat on "In David We Trust," which is a position I left a long time ago, in large part because I don't believe it's the job of a talk radio host in that market to sit there and say, well, the coach is always right. I mean, you know, coach and GM, like the number one backbone of this industry is first and second guessing coaches and general managers. You have to hold those in power accountable. But I left the "In David We Trust" group a long time ago. I think a lot of people over the last 2 years have started to leave pretty quickly. So I guess what I'm asking is, the last two games where you're not mad at the Predators, or at least I'm not mad at the Predators, do the last two games maybe give us a more honest look at how far away this team is from competing with the big boys, the big boys who you are definitely going to play if you somehow, with 28.2% odds, actually make the playoffs. Caroline Fenton, what did you think of Saturday night's game and your thoughts on the playoffs after the two matchups with Carolina?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head that the most frustrating thing is that the Preds really did play well. Like, that team went out there, and I think that they did everything that they could possibly do, but that almost makes it worse, that they played really good hockey, and they still were outshot 28-5 in the first period. The Canes had 24 shots on goal in the first period, 48 for the game. That's a season high. This team is playing some of the best hockey, meaning Carolina, is playing some of the best hockey they've played all season against the Preds, who are also playing very well. So that's just not very encouraging. And my thoughts on them making the playoffs, it could still happen. You know, that's still a serious possibility for the Predators, but making it past that first round if you face Carolina, I don't feel confident in that.
No, and again, I will say this, and I heard Chris Mason talking about this on the broadcast after the game was over about Carolina, and I would say that I agree with Chris. You know, I have been talking about Tampa Bay all the time. I mean, we need to give some credit to Carolina. Here's what Chris Mason said on the broadcast after the game on Saturday night.
I really honestly got to give a lot of credit to Carolina. I've been saying all year, I think Tampa Bay is the best team in the National Hockey League. After seeing the way they play with their work ethic, their speed, their execution, goaltending's always been a little bit of a question mark. That was probably one of the most most impressive periods I've seen from a hockey team all year.
So, and I don't disagree. I mean, I think a lot of this is tipping your cap to Carolina. 615-737-1025. We'll get your reaction to that. I do want to bring up something else, though, in the opening segment. I was glued. I shouldn't say glued. I checked in and out. College baseball is too long for me. Like, these games take too freaking long. They should make college baseball 7-inning games. But Vandy played the Vols this week, and I'm a big believer that college baseball around these parts does not move the needle much. But I think it's nice to have a top five Tennessee team and a top five Vandy team. I watched all three games. I really enjoyed it. And then I was a little bothered after the game yesterday because of what Tim Corbin said. And so Adam Sparks tweeted this out from the Tennessean. And Tim Corbin, who is, I'll say this about the media here in town. They just love on Tim Corbin. Now, Tim Corbin's a good coach. I'm not taking anything away from him. He's a good coach. He is a really good coach. I don't think the fawning that he gets with absolutely zero criticism, I'm not sure that's totally fair. But Tim Corbin kind of either took a shot at the Nashville Health Department, or he took a shot at the Tennessee fans or the Knoxville Health Department or whatever in regards to the COVID restrictions. This is what Tim Corbin said after the game yesterday, a good three-game set between Vandy and Tennessee.
With a tough environment now, this environment here, I don't know what we're doing in Nashville, but there aren't many empty seats now. Let me just tell you, COVID does not exist in Knoxville. There's a lot of people here having a good time, and sometimes at our expense. And we just needed to do our part to play baseball. But it was they created a very good environment here for baseball, and I credit them.
So Corbin backed up his comments later when asked and said it was about giving credit to the Tennessee fans. And Vanderbilt released a statement saying something along the lines of the idea of, hey, we're with Coach Corbin. We want to fill it up, but we got to go with the hell. Here's what I don't like about it. I feel like those comments were the number one story from the weekend after the fact. What the media takes and is going to make a big deal, what fans are going to discuss, those comments. Tim Corbin is a great baseball coach. He is not Dr. Fauci. He's not the mayor. He's not the head of the health board. And you can think whatever you want about those decisions. You can say, hey, 30% capacity at Bridgestone Arena. Are you kidding me? I mean, we got vaccines. Anyone can get one. I mean, what are we talking? You can think whatever you want to think. This is not about COVID. This is not about what you think of it. But we criticized Dan Mullen when he lost a game at Texas A&M and argued, we need to fill our stadium. Everybody criticized Dan Mullen. I did then too. I'm going to criticize Tim Corbin here for this reason. Shouldn't the weekend have been about your team? Shouldn't the weekend have been about the excitement, the positivity that we have, that we there's a rivalry in the state of Tennessee between Vandy and the Vols, and it feels real with good coaches, good players, former or future major leaguers. And yet, yesterday afternoon, everybody wanted to talk about the capacity of stadiums. I'm over talking about whether or not we should wear a mask. I'm overhearing your opinion about how many people should be in a place at one time. I'm sure you're overhearing my opinion or your neighbor's opinion or your friend's opinion or whatever about how long you need to wash your hands for. Tim Corbin's smart. Tim Corbin's not a sore loser like Dan Mullen. I just was really bothered that Tim Corbin brought this up the way he did because it took away from the great baseball weekend that both schools should be celebrating. 615-737-1025 is our phone number, 615-737-1025. And don't worry, we will get into the baseball. I mean, that series, Caroline, I felt like it moved the needle a little bit. I mean, that was we don't talk college baseball much around here. It just doesn't move the needle enough. UT gets good at baseball. Vandy's good at baseball. There's a real rivalry there. I mean, that might actually be the best thing that could happen to college baseball in Nashville, and the best thing that could happen to Vandy, even though Vandy fans won't admit it. 615-737-1025 is our phone number here on Stillman & Company. We've got your phones on the Predators. We got your texts on the Predators. Again, tough weekend against Carolina. The numbers are not in the Preds' favor. We'll get to those coming up next. We're live from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. We're delivered by TriStar Moving, Stillman & Company. It's ESPN 102.5, the game. Predators lose two in a row against Carolina. And again, there is no... I mean, I'm not going to knock the Predators for losing to Carolina. Carolina is a good team. And I mean, Carolina, again, they may be better than Tampa Bay. Crispy came on the show, Caroline. You remember this. Crispy came on the show on Thursday, and he said he thought Carolina was better than Tampa. I'm going to be honest. I watch the Predators, and then I watch the Dallas Stars a little bit, and I kind of just watch around. I'm not watching like NBC SN when it's St. Louis or Minnesota or Colorado or Edmonton or whatever. I did watch Peter Laviolette's team refuse to play defense last night, and just Boston just lit them up on NBC. But I'm not watching it. So I see Carolina, I'm like, whoa, that's a squad. Here are some alarming numbers. Last week, we talked about the Predators having a 62% chance to make the playoffs. And then after the first loss to Carolina, it dropped to 55. That's MoneyPuck.com. According to MoneyPuck.com, as of today, the Dallas Stars own a 61.3% chance to make the playoffs. The Predators own a 28.2% chance to make the playoffs. And the Chicago Blackhawks have a 10.6% chance to make the playoffs. That tells me that the Chicago Blackhawks absolutely have to win all three games against the Predators this week, or else they are done. But should we be alarmed, Caroline Fenton, that it was 62% on Thursday, and it is 28% today?
Coming from somebody who hates analytics, you are relying on these numbers a lot.
Well, these are just percentages. This is not like the spin rate of the curveball for a guy who can't throw a strike is so high that he should be the closer. Like, he can't throw a strike.
I mean, it is a bit concerning that it dropped that drastically. But also, let's say the Preds win tonight and the next game against Chicago. How much is it going to go up then?
That is true.
It can change. It can fluctuate so quickly, especially because each game matters so much. So I'm not going to be too concerned about these percentages because we kind of expected to drop two to Carolina. We hoped for one win.
That's why I was shocked that it dropped two. See, that's why I was stunned that it dropped to 28.2.
Yeah, that's low.
Because didn't we expect them to lose those games? Like,
and it's still a possibility. We said, you know, Preds have to beat Chicago in all three games. Is that a stretch? Maybe, possibly. But we've seen them do some pretty remarkable things so far this season. So, yes, that's a bit alarming, but I don't think it's anything too important to worry about.
I asked Adam Vingan today, you know, do you buy Money Puck? Like, because I'm not a huge, to your point, I'm not a huge analytics guy. Now, I will say this. We talked about this last week on the program. I said, hey, you got handed it to you by Carolina, and they've got four with Detroit coming up. That worries me. That's not an analytic thing, But he said he trusts the Athletics numbers more. The Athletics numbers, to make us feel better, 33% chance. So 28.2 moneypuck.com, 33% from the Athletic. 615-737-1025. I asked you after the Carolina games, you want a do-over? Let's go to your phones. Phone lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Nate is going to kick us off today. Thank you for calling. Go ahead, Nate.
I'm saying no because I have stuck with saying I thought David should have sold in the first place. But you talking about the Preds beating the Hawks, I truly wonder if Poyle still sees the Hawks as the three cups Hawks and if that made any decision into him, quote-unquote, standing pat.
So if that's the case, and I appreciate your call, Nate, if that's the case, if David Poyle looks at this as Chicago is the biggest rival for the Predators, which I would argue is true, if you just say, okay, who's the biggest rival? I would say the biggest rival is the Chicago Blackhawks. If David Poyle's biggest concern is beating Chicago, and that's why he did what he did, then he probably should be fired because beating Chicago is not that big. I mean, like, it's a big deal this week for these games to beat Chicago. To finish ahead of the Chicago Blackhawks in the standings, who you finished ahead of in each of the last three seasons, finishing ahead of the Chicago Blackhawks in the standings should not be the goal. I don't think. I don't want to yell at the caller or discredit the caller or anything like that. I don't think that's how David Poyle's approaching it.
I would hope not.
I would hope not. It's probably the perfect way to say that.
Right. I'm not going to put words into his mouth, and true. I don't know what happened behind the curtain during the trade deadline, but I'm just going to say, I hope not.
That's true. And to be fair, there have been a lot of moments where we've wondered, what is David Poyle thinking? You know, over the last couple of years, where we're like, what is he thinking? So maybe he was, I don't know. Mike is up next. Thank you for calling the show. Go ahead, Mike.
Hey, so my question is, do we really know what Poyle was offered for Ekholm or Granlund or Halla or, you know, maybe even Ryan Ellis? I mean, what if all he was offered were crappy deals?
So Hal Gill, Mike, and I totally understand where you're going, and thank you for your call. Hal Gill kind of alluded to that on the show on Tuesday. Like, I felt that way. I don't have any of those clips prepared, but I felt like Hal came on the show and without saying, and I don't know how much, you know, I mean, Hal used to play for the team, but the team, I don't want to say they keep their broadcasters at arm's length, but I think they treat their broadcasters like everybody treats their broadcasters. I mean, Floyd Reese, when he was general manager of the Titans, was not going to Mike Keith saying, yeah, I think we're going to cut Eddie George next week, Mike. I mean, you just don't do things like that. But Hal seemed to kind of make that point of, you know, if you're not getting offered what you're looking for, you don't do it. And that kind of put a light bulb into my head saying, oh, maybe they weren't offered a lot in return. Maybe they weren't. I don't know. So I did find that to be very interesting. So that's a fair point that the caller makes. But it doesn't really do us any good, right? I mean, we do know Toronto was on Granlund for a while. And then ultimately, I think it was Ian, like 2 weeks before the deadline, said played a clip. Who was it? Frank Cervalli, Ian, of TSN?
Yes, I think it was.
Yeah, who was like, look, Toronto said, hey, man, you got to let us know. And I think that's that they were probably willing to offer something decent in return. 615-737-1025. I see all your Preds texts into the text line. I promise you that we will get to your Preds texts today. We will do that. But coming up next, I have heard something about the NFL draft. There is, I don't want to say kind of a smokescreen going on, but I feel like there's a story surrounding nothing that has to do with the NFL draft because it's not very climactic at the top. But I'm just telling you, the people involved don't seem concerned. I will explain next. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. Speaking of the Predators, by the way, be sure to listen to Robbie and Rex Road. That's right. Tune into Robbie and Rex Road every weekday morning at 8:45 when the Predators have a weekday game this season for your chance to participate in Preds Pick to Click. And you can win a prize pack brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka. Your next chance to participate is Wednesday morning. Have a new partner to tell you all about, one that I'm very excited. It's Edmunds. That's right. Buying or selling a car is one of the biggest financial decisions you can make. Edmunds will take the headaches and guesswork out of car shopping for you. They're pros. They've been helping people like you and me for over 50 years. Edmunds.com was the first auto information website, and they are experts at buying and selling. Look, we can't all test drive different cars. We can't sit there and say, okay, what about this one, this one, this one, this one, this one? Edmunds has been doing this for years. Trust me, I'm somebody when I make a big purchase, I'm a little nervous. I'm like, I don't know how I feel about this. Edmunds gets over. I mean, Edmunds test drives every car so that they will have all of that info for you. Not sure where to start looking? The Edmunds editorial team test drives over 300 new vehicles a year, reviewing almost every car on the market so you can narrow down your search to their top-ranked SUVs, trucks, and more. Edmunds knows cars. They drive them. That's right. You'll have in-depth reviews and knowledgeable vehicle testing editors that will help narrow down your search. Whether you're just browsing or you know exactly what you want, Edmunds gives you that extra boost of confidence. Visit Edmunds.com to get started. For cars, there's Edmunds.
I've never really felt like Mac Jones was the pick. I don't think you do what they did to go up and get Mac Jones. I know it kind of wasn't where we were planning on going with it, but I don't think they did. I think they were doing it for somebody else, and I think just the way the calendar of events has gone on, you're able to go make a big deal about Mac Jones, because guess what? You know, that pro day and those pro days are littered with other players and information that you may draft. So I think that's why this is happening personally, which is why it makes more sense than, you know, doing everything you've done and still going to this pro day if Mac Jones is the pick, to your point about what Jacksonville and the New York Jets are doing.
Here you go, Tim Hasselbeck this morning on ESPN. Big topic. We know Trevor Lawrence goes number one to Jacksonville. We know with the trade of Sam Darnold, Zach Wilson goes number two to the Jets. I thought we knew Mac Jones was going third overall to San Francisco. You heard Tim Hasselbeck say right there, I never believed that because I don't. People have a hard time believing that Mac Jones is going to be the third overall pick this year in the draft. Caroline Fenton is one of them who has a hard time just actually believing that a career backup at Alabama could play 12 games or whatever it was with the best offensive line, best running back, best wide receivers, win the national title, and now go third overall when Justin Fields, who we've been talking about for forever, is kind of an afterthought. You're not the only one, Caroline. I hear it. I mean, all morning, this morning on ESPN, I heard it. But let me say something. I talked to somebody this weekend, in Mac Jones's camp. I know somebody very close in Mac Jones's camp. In fact, I was surprised. Caroline actually knows somebody in Mac Jones's camp, too. But not the same person.
Different camp.
Different camp. Although, similar camp. Same camp. Yeah. Different people in the same camp.
Yes, exactly.
They told me, and this is somebody I trust, they told me they feel pretty good about going third overall to San Francisco. That they don't feel all this smoke screen. Well, they're going to go attend Trey Lance's second pro day, and they're going to go to Justin Fields' second pro day. Everybody goes to everything. Let's be honest. Everybody goes to everything. When Floyd was the general manager of the Titans, they had the number three overall pick in 95, and they knew they were taking Steve McNair. And he still interviewed Kevin Carter, who went in the top 10 that year to the Rams, because they really liked Kevin Carter. And then when the Rams didn't like Kevin Carter anymore, and there was a reputation around the league that Kevin Carter was a bad guy, Floyd knew he wasn't because he'd interviewed him. They go to everything. They talk to everybody. It's not advantageous for them to tell you that they're going to take Mac Jones. But as I said, and this is no guarantee that they're going to take Mac Jones, because Mac's camp is not the camp that decides whether or not Mac goes third. I'm just telling you, Mac Jones's people, Mac's camp, they feel comfortable about the situation with San Francisco. In spite of everything we're hearing, or at least the person I talked to who's close to Mac, said they feel comfortable about third overall to San Francisco. Despite the fact that everybody on ESPN, Caroline, was talking this morning about, oh my God, of course they're going to Justin. They're not sure. They're going to Trey Lance's second pro day because they don't know and they're not sure. And by the way, when did second pro days become a thing?
I don't know. I kind of like it, though. It adds a little bit of extra drama, a little extra spice. But the thing for me is, it's not that I can't wrap my mind around Mac Jones going to the 49ers, because that makes a lot of sense. He just fits Kyle Shanahan's scheme. The thing that I can't wrap my mind around is that Mac Jones is the third player taken in this draft. I don't think he's the third best player. I don't think he's the third best quarterback. But I don't think the 49ers are concerned about Justin Fields technically on paper being a better quarterback.
But see, what you're saying right there is exactly what bothers me about this entire process. The only reason people are questioning the idea of Mac Jones at third overall is because they personally can't see it. See, it's like we don't know anything about Zach Wilson because we don't watch Zach Wilson. So we're told Zach Wilson is a step below Trevor Lawrence. Some people say he's better than Trevor Lawrence. So we're like, okay, we've seen Mac Jones. We saw Mac Jones every game this year because we watch Alabama football. We've seen Justin Fields. So we have a hard time understanding it. But I brought this up last week. You go through the whole Shanahan tree, whether it's Mike Shanahan, Kyle Shanahan, Sean McVay, Matt LaFleur, Arthur Smith, you name it. The only mobile quarterbacks that have been in those systems are RG3 and Marcus Mariota, and both of them failed. The only ones. Matt Ryan can't run. He worked with Shanahan in Atlanta. Going to be Arthur Smith's quarterback. Jared Goff can't run. Matthew Stafford can't run. Ryan Tannehill can't really. I mean, Tannehill's a little mobile, but he's not a running quarter. He's not Fields. So I get it. My problem is when people don't like the news in this case, they seem to just not believe it. They seem to say, there's no way San Francisco could do this. There's no way. I don't believe it because there's no way because you don't believe Mac Jones can go third overall. You think it would be like a football crime if Mac Jones went with the third overall pick. Fair?
I don't think it's a football crime. If you would have told me in the middle of the college football season that Mac Jones is going to go third overall, I wouldn't have believed you. But after all of this talk and seeing what the 49ers want, it makes sense that he would go to San Francisco. Just the idea of him going third overall and him going third overall doesn't necessarily mean that he's the third best player in the draft, but that's kind of what you're insinuating. So just trying to wrap my mind around that is what's difficult. But if the 49ers draft Mac Jones, it would make sense.
So I'm just being told that with all this speculation and all this drama, and I'm not reporting the news here. I'm just telling you that Mac Jones' camp feels pretty good about him going third overall. From the person I talked to inside Mac's camp, they feel pretty good about it. And I think he's going to go third overall. I wouldn't take him third overall, but I think he's going to go third overall. So I just wanted to throw that out there. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Tune in later on in the show. We'll reveal a keyword for you to text into the game text line for your chance to win the T-Mobile Hockey Homegate giveaway, a Dos Equis prize pack, including a case of beer, dessert from Nothing Bundt Cakes, a T-Mobile prize pack, and food provided by 312 Pizza Company in Germantown. Speaking of those text line, of those texts into the text line. Caroline Fenton on it about the Predators. A lot of people want to weigh in after the weekend. Caroline, what do we have in the text line?
Carrie texted in the text line and said, Carolina is healthy and we are not. Are they as dominant without Aho, Svechnikov, and one more vital player?
So I thought about this too the other day, you know, all the injuries and everything else. And we didn't really knock Tampa Bay much, did we? On Tuesday, when you beat them 7-2, now we kept saying, hey, it was a backup goalie, because it should be noted. But Carolina didn't have Teravainen, who, by the way, is a pretty good player. I would agree. The idea that Carolina has Sebastian Aho, they had Dougie Hamilton, they had their core group minus Teravainen. Okay. That doesn't totally excuse it now. The idea, well, you know, the Preds are injured. I mean, the Preds have been injured the whole time. Now, the power play, I mean, that is something that does seriously bother me, the fact that it is clear cause and effect. Elli Tolvanen leaves the power play, and now it's useless. That bothers me. But as far as, like, we can't blame injuries for everything, because some guys are still going to be hurt. You get to the playoffs, you lose. It's like, oh, why did we lose? Injury. Nobody talks about that.
And you don't get extra points just because you lost to a team
that
are healthier than you. It doesn't matter at this point. Like, sure. Yeah, if you want to justify it and say the Predators would have had a better shot at this game if they had Tolvanen and Forsberg out there, sure, I would say so, but that doesn't matter.
Well, the Dallas Stars are going to get Tyler Seguin back. Should we not have factored that in when deciding whether or not to trade guys of, hey, the best contender for your spot is getting an all-star back, a first-line forward who has played in multiple Stanley Cup finals? Should we not have thought about that? But we didn't. So you have to look at it both ways. I mean, we could look at the loss to Tampa and say, you lost 3-0, and they didn't even have two of the best 10 players on the planet who they will have when you play them in the playoffs. And we didn't do that. What else we got?
One texter said, Dallas isn't the surging team that you think they are. Detroit is playing much better as of late, and the Stars are solely relying on Jason Robertson for scoring. Once he cools off, Dallas will sputter again without Radulov and Bishop. Take care of business against Chicago, and then worry about Carolina and proving you demonstrably wrong again for the second time in 4 years if we play them.
Yeah, I mean, you guys can say, oh, you said this about Chicago in 2017, Jared, and you go play the Carolina Hurricanes in the first round. You tell me what happens. You guys go play that series. Tell me what happens. I'd love to be wrong. My gut tells me I'm probably not going to be. 615-737-1025 is our phone number, but these are three big games. 615-737-1025. And speaking about how big this game is, I do have some stats on just how important tonight's game is. Plus, we'll hit the headlines as well. Stoneman & Company, it's ESPN 102.5 The Game, and we're streaming on the Game Nashville app.
The Predators are 5-0 against the Blackhawks this season. I believe my dear friend Joe Rexroth said that the Predators needed at least 4 points out of these three games. I think they need at least 5, if not all 6.
There you go. Adam Vingan says they need 5, if not all 6. Caroline Fenton, here are the stats, according to Money Puck, that Adam actually sent me. If the Predators beat the Hawks in regulation, as of right now, the Predators have a 28.2% chance to make the playoffs. If they beat the Hawks in regulation, they'll have a 35.4% chance to make the playoffs. If they lose in regulation tonight, 18.3%, so down about 10% if the Predators lose in regulation tonight. If they beat the Hawks in overtime, it goes to 31%. If they lose in overtime, so they get a point, it'll be 23.8. So you're looking at the difference of 35 or 18, roughly a 17-point swing, a 17-percentage-point swing in tonight's game against the Chicago Blackhawks. I'd argue that's a big game.
That's a huge game, and I think this entire series against Chicago is so, so, so important. If you drop a game to Chicago, you have to pick those points up either against Florida or Carolina, and I would feel much better about getting those all 6 of those points from Chicago and not having to rely on a win against one of the top 3 teams in this division.
And not only that, one of the reasons why I felt like they needed a win over Carolina was because I felt like if they didn't get it, they'd have to win all 3 against Chicago. And I don't feel very good about winning all 3, knowing that the Blackhawks know that their season is on the line in these 3 games.
And when you've gone 5-0 against Chicago this season, something's got to give somewhere. And I feel like Patrick Kane, I don't know the exact stats, but Adam Vingan had a very interesting point today that Patrick Kane has had so many shots against the Predators and very, very few goals. And I'm sorry that I don't have the specific stats on that. But he is going to come to Nashville and be angry. He's going to want to come and get a bunch of goals and make a statement win against the Predators tonight. So I think that that's going to be a tall order. But these games are so, so, so incredibly important and even more difficult knowing that the Blackhawks are coming in and wanting and fighting for their season.
I think we can all admit that the Predators got outplayed by Carolina over the last 2 nights.
Big
and
time.
That is in large part because Carolina's better. I don't think the Chicago Blackhawks, who have not won a game this year against the Predators, I don't think they believe that they've been outplayed. Like, I think that they think they've outplayed the Predators. And I think this because I think they've outplayed the Predators. And they just look at the goaltenders and they just say, hey, you know, Roman Josi makes an incredible play in overtime earlier in the season. Rene shuts him down in Chicago. Saros shuts him down here. I think they probably think they're the better team and that the goaltending is just letting them down. Time for Caroline's headlines.
We're newspaper spanning the sports world. It's Headlines with Caroline on Stillman & Company. Right here on Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game and the Game Nashville app.
Washington quarterback Alex Smith announced today that he is retiring from the NFL after 16 years. He said in a video on Instagram, "Even though I've got plenty of snaps left in me after 16 years of giving this game everything I've got, I can't wait to see what else is possible." And this man really, truly has given this game everything he's got.
Do you consider Alex Smith a success as the number one overall pick?
It's hard to say no, because I think that he would have been incredibly successful if he didn't almost lose his life and his leg. So I'm not going to say that he was quote-unquote a bust, because I think that his ceiling was so high. So that's kind of a hard question to answer.
So he has the unfortunate comparison of Aaron Rodgers in the same draft class. Mm-hmm. That will make that a little difficult. And also, you know, he was okay in San Francisco, but they wanted to move on. He was good in Kansas City, but they wanted to move on. I'm with you. I think he would have made the playoffs a couple of times as the quarterback in Washington before he got hurt. In fact, I thought that Washington was going to make the playoffs that year. And I think they were 6-3 when he got hurt. Alex Smith is a good quarterback.
Yeah.
I mean, he is a good quarterback. I think it's a great story. But at the same time, you know, you wonder, when you draft a quarterback number one, you want him to be Peyton Manning. You want him to be Patrick Mahomes. You want him to be... Sometimes good is not the end of the world. What else is there?
Yeah, and I agree with you. And I also say that you can measure his success by what he was able to do post-injury, because that was one of the most gruesome injuries, maybe, in NFL
history. He played like five games.
Well, the fact that he was able to walk, much less play professional football, I would call that a success.
Well, yeah. I mean, I could call it a success after the injury. I wouldn't say, you know, well, he was clearly worthy of the 49ers using the first overall pick because he came back after he broke his leg. That's where I guess I...
That is different. The 49ers aren't going to justify that pick just because he recovered from an injury. But exactly. Very cool story. Also, ESPN released an article highlighting which states have produced the most NFL quarterbacks. So if they've played in at least one game in the Super Bowl area, then that counts. Can you guess what the most successful quarterback state is?
California.
Louisiana.
Really?
With 25 starting quarterbacks coming out of Louisiana, it doesn't hurt that Terry Bradshaw, Peyton, and Eli Manning are all three from Louisiana. They have 9 Super Bowl wins and 14 starts coming out of Louisiana. Do you know what state has produced the most Titans quarterbacks?
Okay, let's see. Steve McNair is from Mississippi. Ryan Tannehill is from Texas. Mariota's from Hawaii. Vince Young is from Texas. Kerry Collins went to Penn State. I don't know where he's from. I don't know where the Hasselbecks are from. I'm just going to say Texas because I got Vince Young and I've got Ryan Tannehill. So I'm sure there's another Texan in there, so I'll go Texas.
Good guess, but it's California. California has 3, and Florida, Georgia, New Jersey, and Texas each have 2.
Who are the 3 from California? So is this the Titans Oilers, or is this just the Titans?
This is Titans in the Super Bowl era. So I'm thinking it's just the franchise, not the team.
So you're thinking that it's the Oilers, too?
Right. I'm guessing so. Didn't specify, but Billy Volek, Jordan Palmer, and Matt Cassel.
Oh, God. Jordan Palmer? Jordan Palmer doesn't count. Did Jordan Palmer start a game?
He played a game. That's all that matters.
Did he? Like, Matt Cassel doesn't count either, but definitely Jordan Palmer doesn't count. I mean, oh, goodness. Okay, yeah. All right, hey, take that one and just, here. Do I need this piece of paper? Yeah, I do. I don't need this one. Here you go. Oh, whoops. Here, one of these pieces of paper. Here, take this piece of paper. Throw that out. Jordan Palmer. What else out there?
It counts. Trevor Lawrence got married this past weekend.
I saw that.
And Jaguars fans sent him and his new wife, Marissa, a wedding gift. And they also raised more than $11,000 for him to donate to a charity of his choice. So as a thank you, he and his wife are now pledging to donate $20,000 to Jacksonville Charities. I think he feels pretty confident about going to Jacksonville.
Yeah, I think I saw somewhere that they said that he already has the playbook. Like, that he has Jacksonville's playbook. I mean, Urban Meyer said they're going to take him. And, you know, $20,000 is not a lot of money for the number one pick in the draft.
And like, compared to the amount of money that he's about to get.
I know. So I hear that. I'm like, $20,000? Like, dude. And I think about this all the time. Like, when it comes to tipping, right? Like, I feel the need to always tip at least 20% at a restaurant.
Oh, yeah.
And the reason I say always 20%, now I usually go over 20%, but I just don't want people going around town being like, Jared Stillman's cheap. You know, I don't want people doing that. So when you're the number one pick and you're Trevor Lawrence, like $20,000, again, you can spend your money with charity however you'd like to spend it. And I'm not, you know, knocking the 20 grand, but 20 grand's not a lot of money. Like, if your hand towel is a little bit too long, then it's going to be more than $20,000.
Well, I'm sure he would love to pledge more, but until pen goes to paper, I'd be a little bit nervous about pledging $1 million when you don't yet have a contract.
That's a tough spot to be in. I think it was somebody told me there was a UT basketball player one time who thought he was going to get drafted in the first round, bought a whole bunch of jewelry, and then didn't get drafted.
Ooh, see, that's a tough position to be in. And not only do you have to swallow your pride, you got to take the jewelry back, too.
I feel bad.
It's kind of a bummer.
I feel bad making that $20,000 comment about Trevor Lawrence. Like, I don't count other people's money, so I'm not going to count this.
And he also has a wedding to pay off.
I'm not going to count other people's money, but I'm, Trevor.
It was a beautiful wedding. I saw pictures. So congratulations to Trevor Lawrence and his wife, Marissa. Barrett Sully put out an article saying, you know, which college football coaches are on the hot seat this year. The only coach from the SEC that he listed was Kirby Smart, saying that he may fall into this cycle of Mark Richt of, you know, you're getting to Atlanta, but you're not winning the SEC championship. You know, you may be in national conversation, but whenever it comes to playoff time, you're not necessarily considered. Kind of got me thinking, is that also the kind of mindset that Tennessee and Vandy fans have? They just expect to be at this certain level and not breach that ceiling, and is that a pretty dangerous place to be in?
Yes and no. I mean, to me, the hot seat is like you have the potential to get fired. The thing about the SEC is that the hot seat usually comes on you pretty quickly. Like, I want to say, what's his name? The big guy from Penn State, Moorhead, who was the head coach at Mississippi State. Like, he had an okay first year and an okay but not great second year. And then he had a bad bowl game and they fired him. Like, to me, the SEC, you have no idea when they're coming to get you. Now, some guys like Les Miles win a national championship, so it drags. Or Gus Malzahn played for a national championship, so it drags. But in the SEC, a bad year will get you pretty quickly. I don't think that Kirby Smart is in any way close to losing his job. I can't think off the top of my head who in the SEC is close to losing their job, or who I could foresee losing their job. But then I think, let's have Ed Orgeron have a repeat of last year and see what happens at LSU.
See, which totally just backs up your point that in the SEC, if you have one bad year, you're on the hot seat. The man won the national championship and had one of the best college football seasons of all time years ago.
But if they have another bad season, the talk will then go to, this is who he is. He got lucky with Joe Burrow. He got lucky with Joe Brady. He got lucky with Dave Aranda. He got lucky with all those great players. I mean, LSU's always had great players. They'll have great players next year. Was it really Ed, or was it Brady running the offense and Aranda running the defense? And I don't know which one it was. I'm just telling you what they will say. The narrative will get changed if LSU has a bad year this year. But I also don't think he's in the hot seat because he just won the title. So there's that. Caroline's headlines. Right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Spent some time this morning. Dane Brugler's got a 7-round mock draft on The Athletic. So I decided to, instead of just pick 7 guys I think the Titans should take, I went through each pick and I used who was still available on the board. And I made my picks. And I differ very much from Dane. And I learned a lot from this activity. We'll get to that coming up next. Stillman & Company, it's ESPN 102.5 The Game. We're delivered by TriStar Moving, and we're streaming on the Game Nashville app.